Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most important and most frequently examined topics in your AQA A-level physical education course, training methods. This is section 4.2 on your specification, and I can tell you from experience that it comes up in almost every exam paper, whether that's a short 4-mark question or a full 15-mark extended response. What we're going to cover today is genuinely fascinating because training methods aren't just about what athletes do in the gym or on the track. They're about understanding the science behind why those methods work, which energy systems they target, which physiological adaptations they produce, and crucially, how to match the right method to the right sport. That's what separates a grade B answer from a grade A star answer. So grab a pen, maybe a highlighter, and let's get into it. Let's start with the big picture. All training methods can be categorized as either aerobic or anaerobic, and that distinction is absolutely fundamental. Aerobic training uses oxygen to produce energy and targets the aerobic oxidative system. That's your long-duration, lower-intensity system, dominant in events lasting more than 2 minutes. Anaerobic training does not use oxygen and targets either the ATPC system, that's 0 to 10 seconds of explosive work, or the lactic acid system, which covers roughly 10 seconds to 2 minutes of sustained high-intensity effort. Now let's go through the key training methods one by one. First up, continuous training. This is steady-state exercise performed without rest, typically at 60 to 80% of maximum heart rate, for a minimum of 20 minutes. Think long-distance running, cycling, or swimming. The physiological adaptations include increased stroke volume, that's the amount of blood pumped per heartbeat, increased capillarization of the muscles, and improved mitochondrial density. These adaptations collectively improve the athlete's VO2 max, which is their maximum oxygen uptake. In the exam, if you're asked about continuous training, always quantify the intensity. Don't just say low intensity, say 60 to 80% of maximum heart rate. That's what gets you the mark. Second, interval training and HIIT, high intensity interval training. This involves alternating periods of high intensity work with periods of rest or low intensity recovery. HIIT specifically operates at 85 to 95% of maximum heart rate during work periods. The work to rest ratio is critical here. A typical HIIT protocol might be 30 seconds of maximal effort, followed by 30 seconds of rest, repeated for 20 minutes. The physiological adaptations include improved anaerobic threshold, increased muscle buffering capacity, which means the muscles can tolerate higher levels of lactic acid, and improved EPOC, that's excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. HIIT is time efficient and produces both aerobic and anaerobic adaptations, which is why it's so popular in sport-specific conditioning. However, and this is important for evaluation questions, the high intensity carries a greater injury risk and can cause significant DOMS, that's delayed onset muscle soreness. Always include this risk-reward analysis in extended responses. Third, fartlek training. The name comes from the Swedish for speed play. It's essentially continuous training where the athlete varies their speed and intensity based on terrain or their own choice. It's less structured than interval training, but more sport-specific for games players who experience unpredictable changes of pace, think football or rugby. The key advantage is its versatility and sport specificity. In the exam, link fartlek to sports with intermittent demands. Fourth, resistance and weight training. This is where the distinction between hypertrophy and strength protocols is absolutely critical, and it's one of the most common mistakes candidates make. Hypertrophy training, that's building muscle size, uses 6 to 12 repetitions at 60 to 75% of one rep max, with moderate rest periods of 60 to 90 seconds. Strength training uses 1 to 6 repetitions at 80 to 100% of one rep max, with longer rest periods of 3 to 5 minutes. The physiological adaptations differ too. Hypertrophy produces an increase in the cross-sectional area of muscle fibers, particularly type 2E fibers, while strength training produces neural adaptations. Better motor unit recruitment alongside some hypertrophy. Always state the percentage of one rep max in your answers. That's the mark scoring detail. Fifth, plyometric training. This is one of the most technically demanding methods to explain in an exam, and it's worth knowing really well. Plyometrics involves rapid, explosive movements that use the stretch shortening cycle. Here's how it works. During the eccentric phase, that's the landing or loading phase, the muscle spindle apparatus detects the rapid stretch of the muscle and sends a signal via the SA afferent nerve to the spinal cord. This triggers a myotatic stretch reflex, which causes an immediate and powerful concentric contraction. Think of it like a spring being compressed and then released. Examples include box jumps, depth jumps, bounding, and squat jumps. Plyometrics primarily targets the ATPC energy system and recruits type IX fast twitch muscle fibers, the most powerful and most fatigable. The adaptation is increased rate of force development and improved neuromuscular efficiency. The risk? High impact forces mean significant injury risk, particularly to tendons and joints. This is essential content for evaluation questions. Sixth, circuit training. This involves performing a series of exercises at different stations with minimal rest between stations. It can be designed to target multiple fitness components simultaneously: strength, cardiovascular endurance, agility, making it highly versatile. The key advantage for the exam is its adaptability. A circuit can be made sport-specific by selecting exercises that mirror the movement patterns of the athlete's sport. Now, a word on altitude training, because this comes up in extended responses. Training at altitude, typically above 2,000 meters, exposes the athlete to hypoxic conditions, meaning reduced partial pressure of oxygen. The body responds by increasing erythropoietin production, EPO, from the kidneys, which stimulates the production of additional red blood cells. This shifts the oxygen dissociation curve and increases the blood's oxygen-carrying capacity. When the athlete returns to sea level, they have more red blood cells available, improving aerobic performance. The drawback? Training quality decreases at altitude due to reduced oxygen availability, and the benefits are temporary, typically lasting 2 to 4 weeks after return. Finally, let's touch on flexibility training. PNF, proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation, is the most effective method for improving flexibility. It involves a partner-assisted stretch. The muscle is stretched to its limit, then the athlete performs an isometric contraction against resistance for 6 to 10 seconds, then relaxes, and the partner pushes the limb further into the stretch. The mechanism involves the Golgi tendon organ detecting the tension during the isometric contraction and causing autogenic inhibition, a relaxation of the muscle, allowing a greater range of movement. Do not confuse this with static stretching, which simply holds a position for 15 to 30 seconds. The mechanisms are entirely different. Right, let's talk exam technique, because knowing the content is only half the battle. The number one mistake I see is describing a training method without applying it to the sport in the question. If the question asks about a training program for a 400-meter runner, every answer must reference the lactic acid energy system, type TIA muscle fibers, and the specific demands of that event. AO2 marks, that's application, are worth 35% of your total marks. Don't leave them on the table. Mistake number two, vague intensity descriptions. High intensity scores nothing. 85 to 95% of maximum heart rate scores marks. 70 to 80% of one rep max scores marks. Always quantify. Mistake number three in extended responses, not evaluating. For 8 and 15 mark questions, you must include a balanced evaluation, the physiological benefits, and the potential drawbacks. For HIIT, improved anaerobic threshold versus injury risk and DOMS. For plyometrics, improved rate of force development versus high impact injury risk. For altitude training, increased red blood cell count versus reduced training quality. Use the acronym SPORE to structure application answers. Specificity, progressive overload, reversibility, recovery. If you're designing or evaluating a training program, work through each principle. For command words, identify just needs a name. Describe needs detail. What it looks like, what the parameters are. Explain needs a mechanism, how and why. Evaluate needs judgment, strengths, weaknesses, and a conclusion. Analyze means break it down into components and discuss each one. One more tip. In periodization questions, remember the three cycles. Macrocycle, the overall training year. Mesocycle, blocks of 4 to 6 weeks targeting specific adaptations. Microcycle, the individual week of training. Examiners award marks for correctly applying these terms to a training program structure. Okay, quick fire quiz. I'll ask the question, give you 3 seconds to think, then I'll give the answer. Question one. What percentage of one rep max is used in hypertrophy training? Answer, 60 to 75%. Question two. Which energy system does plyometric training primarily target? Answer, the ATPC system. Question three. What does EPO stand for and what does it do? Answer, erythropoietin. It stimulates red blood cell production. Question four. What is the mechanism behind PNF stretching that allows greater range of movement? Answer, autogenic inhibition via the Golgi tendon organ. Question five. Name the three periodization cycles in order from largest to smallest. Answer: macrocycle, mesocycle, microcycle. How did you do? If you got all five, brilliant. You're in great shape. If you missed some, go back and review those sections. Let's wrap up. Today, we've covered the six key training methods: continuous, interval, and HIIT, fartlek, resistance training, plyometrics, and circuit training, along with altitude training and PNF flexibility work. We've linked each method to its target energy system, its physiological adaptations, and its appropriate sporting context. The key takeaways for your exam are: always quantify intensity, always apply to the specific sport in the question, and always evaluate with both benefits and drawbacks in extended responses. Remember, SPOR for training principles, remember the rep ranges for hypertrophy versus strength, and remember the stretch shortening cycle for plyometrics. You've got this. Keep revising, keep testing yourself, and I'll see you in the next episode. Good luck.